This is Pat Barry, here with Joe Barry of Barry Investment Advisors. And by now, you likely have completed the Investing Emotion Cycle quiz. And we'd like to share with you our thoughts on where we think the different asset classes, from the tech stocks to European markets to the bond market and low interest rates to China and the idea of the Fed, where they sit on the emotion cycle. So as you likely know, this is not your opinion, which may differ from the crowd as far as where each asset class is on the chart here. It's where you think the crowd is, where the general investing public, the institutions out there, how they feel about the different asset classes. And these asset classes, they can go through a full cycle in a short period of time, as little as 18 months, or a long period of time, 10 to 15 years. So keep that in mind. So Joe, the first area here is the tech stocks, the commonly known FANG stocks, you know, the Facebooks and Apples and Googles of the world. Where would you put this category on the map?
Well, Pat, I think this has been an almost 20-year cycle. The last peak was during the dot-com mania, which peaked out in early 2000. So it's almost been 20 years. We have a lot of the same sort of emotional thrill. I would say even we've seen euphoria in the concentration of excitement in those big tech names. And, you know, when we as advisors, when we're trying to gauge the levels of the markets, you know, there are anecdotes. There are things that seem to happen near the top and things that seem to happen near the bottom. Just an idea on how you could gauge in euphoria. When you have a friend, maybe in the stock market, who tells you, you know what, I'm really good at this, you're probably near euphoria. If another friend who isn't particularly good at investing says, I should have never done this, the game is rigged, I think I'll get out of the market until the outlook looks better. That's at the bottom, despondency. The tech stocks, are actually trading, that group is actually trading lower than they did in the summer of 2018. And we're not expecting these wonderful companies to go out of business. So this is a matter of, you know, what price should you pay to be an owner? One of those little tells, little anecdotes, I think, might have been 238 cities and regions trying to get Amazon's second headquarters. That was a little bit notable. You'll notice on the chart, though, there's an image of a unicorn, and that represents the big tech stocks that are privately held that came into 2019 with a lot of excitement about big IPO paydays. And we all know that that has hit the wall like a thud, and probably a poster child that would kind of indicate that we're past euphoria here is the dramatic reversal of fortunes for the WeWork company. So my hunch of the investing public's emotion right now is probably anxiety to denial in the tech area.
Well, we're not saying you can't make money in, or won't be able to make money in technology companies going forward, but and that they haven't changed the world. I mean, they've transformed a lot of the economy and the market. But when you look at especially those five or six names that most mutual funds own, I think Apple and Google right now are over $1 trillion in market cap. Most companies haven't stayed up in that zone, and just how widely held these names are, and you're seeing the slowing of some of their growth rates and some of the challenges. Even Amazon is starting to take away from Google's ad revenue with the searches. I think any investment trend that has grown at the highest rates that these have grown, that some of them are likely to falter and they just have become riskier at these levels. I totally agree. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have Europe, which I'll cover. So Europe right now is at a 70-year low in company valuation compared to the U.S. market. And that may be a record. I mean, anything I've looked at, I haven't seen that level of a gap. And the reason is the investments in Europe just aren't as profitable. Their profits haven't been growing. The stimulus hasn't been working over there. They have the political issues, whether it's from Greece to Italy to Brexit. And so the local European investors have been more comfortable owning American stocks, which have been growing faster with their earnings compared to Europe. That can change temporarily, but it just hasn't. So even though there are similar companies to the U.S. based in Europe that earn the same amount of money on both continents, but they're priced at a discount. So that one I would put somewhere at the bottom, probably despondency. That moves on to the next category, which is low interest rates, the bond market, the idea of low inflation. Where, Joe, would you put that category on the chart?
Understandable if you had a little difficulty placing this on the curve. What we tried to get at here is the bond market, specifically the investing public's emotion for bonds. And you really have to break bonds into two categories. One are government guaranteed bonds, and the other category would be low quality bonds. In the government guaranteed category, the interest rates, as we all know, are at levels that have never been seen in recorded history. And the sort of the item that I look at that kind of helps me with the position on this chart was an issue by Austria 2 years ago of a 100-year bond that they were able to sell with a fixed interest rate of 2%. And they got more orders than they could fill for that bond. That's enthusiastic to think 2% for 100 years is a good deal. Well, a few months ago, that same bond traded at over double its initial offering price. Paying the current price for that bond would yield the buyer today less than 1% return for the 98 years left to go. That buyer feels that they have a very, very high chance of being able to sell that bond at an even higher price. I'd have to put that at euphoria, Pat. The second group is low quality bonds. People have not been able to tolerate, nor have institutional pension plans and institutional investors been willing to tolerate next to no interest from short-term interest rates or the long-term government bonds. So money has, and this has gone on quite a while, money has been flowing into very low quality bonds from corporations. Much like the behavior before the financial crisis, these bonds are being packaged into securities and sold broadly held by bond funds and institutional portfolios. Very cavalier, almost careless buying of low quality companies, and that too, I believe, is in the thrill euphoria complacent area. Pat, back to you.
Well, I don't think you can get higher in emotion than buying a bond that you pay such a high premium for that if you wait to maturity and you lose the premium, you actually lose money on the bond because the interest payments aren't high enough. I mean, I think that's about as high as you get in the bond market. But that moves on. It takes us to China. China, over the last 20 years, has had a tremendous run with their economy as far as developing. They moved hundreds of millions of people to the cities. Many, many people got much higher pay, and they became this massive middle class. But that all in the beginning of the 2000s, from 2000 to 2007, that was where a lot of the transformation happened. And it took until about 2006 to the market really to respond to it. It went from somewhere on 1,000 up to 6,000 in Shanghai. And so a massive move there. And within about 18 months, you did a full cycle on the emotion curve. And it had another blip in the last 10 years. But I think that since then, China has been trying to pivot and figure out what its next growth phase is. And there's been more fear in the market. I think I would put it there at the moment. We're seeing slowing car sales, weakening currency, tariff issues, and a general growth slowdown. And I think generally people are not, they're more cautious about buying China, in spite of some of the technology names still getting some interest. So, Joe, the whole idea about the Federal Reserve, everybody knows the Federal Reserve can set short-term interest rates, they can stimulate the economy, they can bail out banks and provide a backstop to the market. Where would you put the idea of the Fed helping out investors when there's a correction or if there's an economic problem, that they have everybody's backs?
Well, we have Uncle Sam here, and he'll bail you out. And it's not only the Fed, Pat, but it's also expectations from the federal government itself through running deficits and cutting taxes. I've been doing this a long time, and when it comes to Washington getting involved through fiscal policy or the Federal Reserve, years ago, 20, 30 years ago, it was an intent to try to smooth out the ups and downs in the economy. And, as far as investors were concerned, if the interest rates were lowered 20 years ago and it helped the economy pick up, people bought more houses and cars, that would show up in, better earnings into the stock market. This seems to have evolved since the dot-com crash, where the Federal Reserve comes in and lowers interest rates, and the money seems to go directly into the stock market. We have these boom cycles in the stock market, and like on Main Street, not that much activity happening. When you invest money outside of a bank account or a treasury bill, you're taking some kind of risk, and you do that because you want to earn more money. You want to do better than the bank, and the expectation always has been, look, if you put your 401k in stocks, you could lose. In recent years, I sense the public is getting more and more comfortable with the fact that Uncle Sam's got our back, that the Federal Reserve will be right in there if things start to get a little ugly with cutting interest rates. And of course, we know in Europe they've gone below zero, it's just not that risky anymore to do that. And if we get to a point where the markets are responding to lower interest rates, you're going to see tax cuts, you're going to see multi-trillion-dollar spending packages for infrastructure. I won't say that we're at the peak of thrill and euphoria on Uncle Sam bailing us out, but I think we're on our way up that curve. Possibly the peak would be going in and literally buying common stock with government money. That might sound far-fetched, but the Swiss do it and the Japanese do it. I believe it's illegal right now, but hey, we could figure a way around that. That would be euphoria. But right now, I would put it probably in optimism, working its way up the curve.
Yeah, I think one example of that was at the end of last year, after we had a 20% drop in the U.S. market, Jay Powell came out and said, we're going to be more flexible. We may stop raising rates. And just that statement created a U-turn in the market. The investors were buying like crazy, and it really led to this big rally that we've seen this year. So I think that's a fair sign that you are likely right. So Joe, anything else? Well, the point of this chart and this exercise is to help you with your investing and to recognize that emotions drive some of the price behavior and the investor behavior out there in the market. And that if you're aware that everybody's in an investment and they're being euphoric about it, it's probably time to steer clear. So if you're heavy invested in the tech market and the unicorns and the most crowded names, it's probably time to diversify. And if you've never thought about buying European names or investments in China or some of these other areas that are people aren't really touching right now, it's probably time to think about some of the names in those markets. Joe, anything else to add?
Well, probably to simplify this whole thing is to quote Warren Buffett, who has said, buy when people are fearful and sell when people are greedy. So we will conclude with that and just remind you that go to our website for all of our information and regulatory information, and or give the office a call if you want to learn more about Barry Investment Advisors. Thanks so much for listening.